Welcome to the Collector's Show, where you'll learn insider secrets about collecting everything. Best places to buy, how to judge authenticity, and what are the collectibles of the next generation. Here's your host, Harold Nickel.
Well, greetings and welcome. Welcome to the Collector's Show here on Web Talk Radio. I am your raspy-throated host, Harold Nickel, and you'll remember that last week I told you that you could tell it was fall in Southeast Texas because it was not as hot as it usually was and because of all of the pollen. Well, unhappily, all of that has transformed me into a raspy-throated shell of what I once was, and so I apologize for my rotten voice in advance, but that's just the way things go some weeks. Of course, we're going to do the news, but in the interview segment of the program, we're going to talk about a hobby that just transcends not just collecting and collectors, but generations and people from all walks of life. We're going to talk about Lego, and it will be something you're going to want to hang around for. But first, just like we do every week, we're going to talk about the news from the world of collecting. And this is really stunning to me. Collectible sneakers. There's a blog that's called Campless, and he claims that this week, secondary market sneakers resold by collectors topped $1 billion in the last 12 months. He says that this is a market for coveted Jordans and other specialty shoes. The Campless blog was founded in 2012 by a technology executive who figured out how to take data about collectible sneakers being sold on eBay to figure out what the market for them was. eBay sales alone were up 31% in the last year. That's $338 million. Campless estimates eBay is just a fourth of the whole market for collectible sneakers, which is where he gets the billion-dollar figure. Nike and its Jordan brand represent 95% of the resold sneaker market. The Oregon sportswear giant releases limited edition shoes through its website and on Twitter, and it's done this for quite some time and does it on just about a weekly basis. The shoes are really just slight variations of shoes that are already on the market, like a new color of a previously released Air Jordan. And Nike doesn't disclose how many pairs it sells of each limited edition shoe. But such shoes will often retail for $200 or even lower, but they get scooped up within mere moments by these resellers who are going to turn around and sell them through eBay or one of the other auction sites for a much higher price. And Campless, again, estimates on average about a 40% markup. So examples of these collectible shoes, like there's one that was designed by Kanye West, the Red Octobers, those are $3,000 a pair, according to Campless. The shoe retailed for $245, which to me seems like a lot for a pair of sneakers, but hey, what do I know? And there were probably only a couple of thousand pairs ever made. The explosive growth in sales of collectible sneakers is sort of good and sort of bad news for sneaker companies. It shows that people are really interested in these limited releases and that Nike has the industry lead and the ability to keep a product fresh with consumers by making just a little tweak or color or redesign and keeping the quantities low, which of course drives up demand and the price. And even Wall Street has taken notice of it. But it also creates problems for the serious collector who is not necessarily a reseller, and this is just my opinion, but if you really do want to collect specialty Nikes, but the price goes up 10 times before you can even get your hands on them, it just seems like it's a little unfair. And I know that things are worth what people are willing to pay for them, but one of my huge pet peeves in life are ticket brokers who will snatch up tickets to sporting events and concerts and then turn around and jack up the price and sell them to people like me. I never get a chance to buy a ticket for an event and pay face value for it, which also translates into the fact that I don't get to go to as many sporting events or shows as I'd like. And it's kind of the same thing with these shoes. It just seems a little unfair. On the other hand, the people who collect shoes can do like what I do with the event tickets and just not buy them. Vote with your pocketbook, I suppose. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. I had no idea that such a market for sneakers, and Nikes in particular, existed. So we're going to move from Oregon, where Nike is located, to Georgia, the Georgia Radio Hall of Fame. I love radio. And podcasting, like the one you're listening to now, is latter-day radio. So anytime I see a story about radio, I want to cover it. And you'll recall that I think early in the summer we did a whole program about collecting transistor radios. Well, the Georgia Radio Hall of Fame has a new display of very rare transistor radios. And the thing that makes them rare is the fact that they were purchased by an individual who went to Japan on business. These radios were purchased from the company that would eventually turn into Sony. But this fellow would go over there, buy these radios, and bring them back. He also has some that were promotional. One for the campaign of President Jimmy Carter. Another one is the replica of the Starkist tuna, their spokesfish Charlie. And another is a replica of Superman, of course. But the Georgia Radio Museum has all kinds of displays, and this display of never sold transistor radios and specialty radios is their newest one. Their website is grhof.com, and I'll of course post that to the Collectors Show website. Okay, patch collecting. We're going to move south of Georgia into Florida, where a man named Al Sklar, he's 81 years old, has a collection of 1,700 patches from fire stations in all 50 states and 14 countries. He's even got some from Peru and Australia, and recently from Siberia, where a family member went to teach English. And so his granddaughter, Danielle, brought home 3 patches from Siberia. Mr. Sklar is a courier for the Pembroke Pines Fire Rescue Department, and his collection takes up all of the walls of the fire department there. In fact, they had said he had run out of walls, so he suspended his collecting. He travels with patches when he goes on vacation and says he always visits the fire station wherever he goes in his travels. And I just think that's kind of neat because I'm forever reading about networking, and I'm terrible at it. But if I had a hobby like Mr. Sklar, and I could take a fire department patch and offer to trade one of mine for one of theirs, I've got instantly something to talk about with somebody I have something in common with. It's a good lesson for people who are shy or have trouble starting a conversation. If you have something in common, like a collection with somebody, you can make all kinds of friends and meet people who have similar interests, which brings me to the last story in the news. It's the controversy regarding the ban by Toys R Us on the Breaking Bad action figures. And there's a really snotty article from The Guardian, which is published in the UK, by a guy whose name is Rupert. Of course it is. And he has a lot of really negative judgments about collectors that he brings with him to his article, our friend Daniel Pickett, who's been on with us a couple of times and is an action figure aficionado, is mentioned in the story. But anyway, good old Rupert really belittles collectors of action figures and says, and this is him, not me, that adult toy purchasers claim they are collectors doesn't change the fact that they're just playing with dolls. Okay, fine. Sometimes writers and commentators just want to stir up controversy just to generate views and click-throughs and things like that. But as a collector, and like I mentioned about Mr. Sklar and his Fire Patch collection, those collections, whether it's action figures or patches or anything, generates conversation, and we find that we have things in common with people that we might not ever have the opportunity to talk with about anything. So he can just take his bad attitude someplace else. And I'm not going to post your rotten story to the website, Rupert. I may talk to Daniel and try to get him on to bring us up to speed, but not Rupert. Send him a nasty reply to his comment section in The Guardian. And it was filling up with very negative comments about the article. I don't understand why he'd go out of his way to condemn people he doesn't know. It's never a good idea to judge groups of people in mass. It's a very bad article, and I obviously feel strongly about it. So, anyway, that's the news from the world of collecting. I wasn't sure I'd be able to talk all the way through, but hey, look at me, I did. Coming up, Lego. You'll remember we talked about that red Darth Vader helmet from a Lego that was worth all kinds of money. We're going to learn a lot about Lego coming up next on The Collector Show with me, the raspy-throated Harold Nickel. Well, welcome to the interview segment of The Collector Show. You may remember a news item that we had for you that described a website where you could go and find your lost Lego part. Lego, of course, being the incredibly popular construction toys that has transcended the decades. One of those parts we talked about was a red Darth Vader helmet. I had never heard of Darth Vader wearing anything red, but this particular one from Lego, in good condition, fetched a very high price. In fact, it was in the thousands of dollars, if I remember right. So I got to thinking about Lego and Lego collectors and their collections and decided, you know, we should really do a whole show about Lego. I don't think I've ever seen a group of people more engaged and more passionate about their hobby than the Lego collectors are. They're just in a league by themselves. And the thing that really is interesting, and we'll talk more about this, is the fact that, like I said, it transcends the ages. So we're going to welcome Will Reed of BrickBlogger.com. It's just an incredibly big internet resource for all things related to Lego and collecting Lego. And Will, welcome to The Collector Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Harold.
Well, thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, I'm never too busy to talk about Lego.
Well, that's good. That's good, yeah. Because it's like I say, it's just a huge deal. And when I looked at your site to get ready to visit with you, it looks like there's just volumes of information about all different types of Lego sets, Lego collections. They've got castles, Disney, Star Wars, Batman, and that's not even a good start at what's available to collect for Lego. So if you're a newcomer, how or where would you start with Lego?
Well, not to sound intimidating, but our site happens to be one of the smaller sites. There are entire websites that have just hundreds more than what you just saw and listed off.
That's frightening.
It really can be intimidating. But ultimately what we tell people, because I not only write for the Brick Blogger, but I'm the vice president of a local Lego user group. And when we have people come in and ask, I want to get started, but I don't know how, it's just as simple as, what are you interested in? And that works well through, you know, any type of collector's series. It doesn't matter what it is. What captivates your interest? Because there is enough to go around. And it's usually from that small start that things kind of snowball. My wife and I, for example, we started with Castle.
Uh-huh.
Because we both really love the whole medieval theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started, once we actually got that, we went through the back catalog, bought some old sets, looked at it, goes, that's pretty neat. Hey, that ninja set could kind of fit in Castle. So then we started buying this new series called Ninja Go, and I was like, okay, that was fun. Hey, look, they're superheroes. And then now we're just buying whatever interests us. And that's usually how it goes. But I would say start with what you like the best.
So you
and chances.
Yeah, you evolved from Castle to medieval ninjas to superheroes. And
yeah, and the sad thing is the ninjas aren't even medieval. They're brightly colored. They're actually closer akin to Power Rangers.
Oh.
It was just an excuse to buy them.
Yeah, well, it doesn't sound like you need a whole lot of excuses to really get deeply involved in this, and I'm interested to hear that your wife likes this too, and I would not have thought this was something that a lot of women or girls was interested in. Am I wrong about that?
Well, the thing is, if you were a child and your parents put Lego in front of you, that seems to be more of the deciding factor on whether or not you're going to be interested.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. It just so happens that probably starting in the late 80s, going into the 90s, Lego made a stronger focus towards pushing this towards boys. And so that has really cut down the amount of females just exposed to Lego as children.
I was just going to say that, like, the Star Wars and the superheroes and those kinds of things kind of by definition are aimed at the boys.
Yes, and that actually has nothing to do with Lego. It's more of those particular IPs are in themselves already geared towards those genders.
And IPs, of course, intellectual properties, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Good. And I'm surprised, too, that maybe other than the like the remote control planes and helicopters and things, or the science fair is maybe the only other place where you see, you know, adults and their children so involved.
I think the only other hobby that can also come close is board games. Which happens to be a whole other hobby that my wife and I share.
You've got a lot of free time on your hands, Will. You and her both.
No, yeah. Well, I'm also a her and I. We actually design board games.
And you're like what? An investment banker?
No, I'm a freelance writer.
Oh,
in fact, one of the ways I get paid is through being paid with review copies of Lego.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so not too long ago, I got a $250 set in the mail. And I was like, yeah, there's my paycheck.
That's awesome. What a cool job.
Yeah. I actually worked for a short time as a freelance writer for the Legoland Discovery Centers, which were kind of those indoor centers where you could go and there'd be like amusement rides as well as a whole bunch of activities all centered around Lego.
That's so cool that, you know, and we find this on the show a lot where people are able to take the things that they really love collecting, and whether it's, you know, Lego or you name it, and turn it into a job. Good for you, man.
And yeah, I mean, I always love to do something I'm passionate about, and if I can find a way to make a living doing it, I'm going to.
So these toys or these sets of Lego, they're incredibly appealing. Is it the sitting and building part that makes them so appealing, or is it something else, or is it all of the above?
The building of it is just one aspect of it. A lot of people will gravitate towards the end product. So, for example, just this year, there's a line called Lego Ideas, where fans can submit ideas of models that they've created, and then people can vote on them whether or not Lego should actually make them as an official set.
Wow.
And recently, the Lego's Ghostbuster, Ecto-1, along with the four characters from the movie, got made into a set. And people may not care whether or not for the building, but they love Ghostbusters, and this has never been done.
That's one of the things, too, that I've learned in my career as a marketer, that the companies who engage with their customers, fans, the most, and actually develop relationships with them,
mm-hmm.
are the ones that are the most successful. And it sounds like this was a venue for them to get even more involved with their, and we'll call them fans because I can't think of a better word,
right.
but involved with fans and fans involved with the company, a real two-way communication between both.
Yeah, and Lego has been making strides on trying to make that a center point of how they push themselves forward.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they just revamped a whole program called the Lug Ambassador Program, and that's where people – I should explain. Lug stands for Lego User Group.
Okay.
And usually it's they're formed by two ways, either virtually because you don't live near anyone but you want to share a common interest,
mm-hmm.
or in your local area. So maybe a major city might have a Lug, and all those people congregate or in a single point, and then we just talk about Lego, or we show off what we're building, or plan events, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Lug Ambassador Network, it gets representatives from those Lugs to come together on a site, kind of like in a representative government format,
mm-hmm.
so that those people can say, this is what we here in whatever city are really thinking, what we're seeing, and they can talk to Lego.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have what I just mentioned, the Lego Ideas site, where people can put up their creation and go, hey, do you think this will make a really good set? And if they get 10,000 votes, it goes into a consideration process where they have to vet the idea, consider how the intellectual property will work, whether it meshes with Lego's family-friendly approach. And if they like it, they'll announce it, and it'll become a set.
So does the inventor, do they win anything, or do they get a piece of action? Or
they get a piece of the action, so I believe it's like 1% of the profits, which sounds small, but considering that Lego is a worldwide company, and so far, whenever a Lego Ideas set has come out, it's sold out.
Yeah, I was going to say 1% for a company this size, that doesn't sound small at all. That sounds like hundreds of thousands, if not millions.
Right.
It makes me think I should go out and get me one of these and start thinking up a way to enter.
Yeah. I mean, you just register on the Lego Ideas site. You have an idea. You look at what projects are working, and that will first get you in the steps to follow for being successful. But it's a lot of once you get a good idea, it's just advertising yourself.
Outstanding.
Because you have to drum up that excitement for whatever it is you built, and let people know, And in that process, you'll even talk back and forth with other fans and go, well, I think it would look better if it had this. And then so
you have
the
to campaign.
Creator, yeah, you have to campaign for it.
Oh, that's so cool. So it's there's creativity, there's ideation, and there's marketing.
Right, all in one site.
That's really something. I, you know, even in researching, you know, Will, getting ready to talk to you today, it, none of that came across. Maybe I should spend more time getting ready for the show. But
oh, no. No, don't feel bad. There is so much out there for Lego and for the community. It's hard to just even chip at this thing that turns out to be an iceberg.
Yeah. And it's just the very tip of the tip, I guess. So let's talk collecting. I had mentioned that Darth Vader helmet that was red. And
right.
The other thing that I read in this news item was that plumbers were the, I think, the best source of finding lost Lego parts because they end up in drains, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it made me also think about other parts. Like, you get to putting your set together, or you've gotten it out after several years, and there's like one thing missing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can they come to your site and get help finding it?
It actually depends on what they really need. Like I said, the way our site works is we're there to help newcomers. Mm-hmm. So whether you're a teen builder just getting into the more adult side of Lego, or you're the new fan, you kind of need to figure out where you need to go. So for a problem like what you're talking about, a good site would be BrickLink.
Okay.
BrickLink is kind of like the fan eBay for anything and everything Lego.
Oh.
It doesn't matter if it's their old wooden sets or whether it's just one single piece in a trans clear color or if it's a red Darth Vader helmet.
Right.
Someone's going to sell it because it's a world market.
Wow.
You will buy from Germany, Czech, Japan, Hong Kong, U.S., Canada, anywhere in the world where Lego is sold, there's going to be sellers from that region.
Yeah,
and they'll sell sets, they'll sell parts, they'll sell instructions, they'll sell the box.
Man.
Just the box.
Does anybody ever fabricate counterfeit parts that you're aware of?
Yes. In fact, there's quite a few businesses out there that basically create parts that are interchangeable with Lego. And the reason why they do that is not because they're trying to make a counterfeit and trying to pass this off as, even though you will find people with, you know, trying to recreate a red Darth Vader helmet and sell it. The real issue is they're trying to make parts that Lego as a business won't make. So a good example of this is Brick Arms. Brick Arms is a site that's dedicated on making military replica of so weapons, uniforms, pieces of equipment that Lego will. They basically said we will never make this
right.
because it's not the family friendly emphasis of their company.
Yeah, interesting because I'm acquainted with doing this show, have met several people who do this kind of work, and they have also said that things to do with the military or things that they don't deem family friendly, they won't sell them.
Right, but there's still a big community out there that wants to build a creation that is a World War II battle scene.
Right.
And to do that, they actually have to go outside to these third-party companies, which actually take the process that goes into making a piece, and they duplicate it, but with, you know, those specific specifications in mind.
Yeah, that's it sounds like you don't have to peel the onion too many layers to discover that there's just a whole industry that has grown up around
right.
Lego. And you were talking about the tie-ins and the intellectual property. And the thing that impresses me as much as anything does is that the company has reinvented itself so many times with their movie tie-ins.
Right.
And it just seems like just that all by itself helps keep Lego relevant. Any thoughts on that?
Well, actually, probably mid to late 90s, Lego was struggling. Up to that point, they had worked with other intellectual properties, probably about 20 different ones, but nothing to the extent of what you see today with, like, Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It might be something like the Nestle Quick Rabbit in a small little set. Yes, that's...
I'm old that enough to remember the Nestle Quick Rabbit.
The minifigure of the Nestle Quick Rabbit actually exists.
Wow.
So the company was making a lot of parts in a lot of different colors. They were actually just expanding the toy company left and right. They started making stuff that weren't the constructible building thing that they are now known as. And they got into a lot of financial problems.
Mm-hmm.
So then they looked at their leadership, brought some people in, changed things around, and that's when they really brought in the idea of, well, let's try Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because Star Wars has this massive fan base, appeal all over the world. It can kind of fit in with our toy line. We need to slim down all the colors. And they did it, and it took off. In fact, most adult fans, that if you go to like a fan convention,
mm-hmm.
their number one interest that started them in Lego is going to be Star Wars.
Yeah, that's a huge franchise, and one that's really been renewed lately because of the fact that Disney bought the franchise, and they're going to start
yes.
making movies again.
Yes. And in the interim, because, you know, the movies have been out and done for a while, the Lego company has been making sets based off of the cartoon TV series.
Right.
The Clone Wars, and I think there's another one out that's they desperately don't want to stop making Star Wars. And when I think they were more thrilled than anybody else to hear that Disney bought them and, hey, we're going to make more movies. And they're like, yes.
Hell yeah.
Taking it to the bank.
It's, it's the golden goose, or the goose that laid the golden egg, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
So let's think extremes, okay?
All right.
I've got a picture in my mind of somebody who has just lost their mind and spent...
I probably know them.
Okay, good. And spent... tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars building some gymongous Lego set.
Right.
Tell us about one of those.
You do have those people, but when you actually get to that level, there is a program called the Certified Master Builders.
Okay.
And these aren't actually technically Lego employees. What these people are kind of artists, and they've made this agreement with Lego, which gets them a really good deal on bulk pieces, and they will actually make museum displays. I think the most famous of these people is Nathan Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually toured the world with his displays, and he uses thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pieces to make model after model. Meanwhile, you still have people in their in their homes, still making models that are like tens of thousands of pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Someone I know makes World War II battleships, and they stretch out for like 5 feet at the smallest.
Wow.
You have people that make skyscrapers. And if you stand next to them, the skyscraper itself is probably 6 feet tall.
Man.
I went to a convention a couple years ago, and the Tower of Orthanc, that's in the Lord of the Rings movie, one group got together and made a tower about 7 to 8 feet tall.
Man, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, it goes. If you think you've seen something, someone's going to step up and go, "Oh yeah, we'll take a look at this."
That's right. I think about those people who, like, their Christmas decorating is just so completely over the top. It's taken over their lives, and they use their vacation to start putting stuff up. There had to be the Lego equivalent of whatever that was. I don't know what the name for that is.
Well, they're still just called fans. Like, there's this lady up in Seattle, and she is on record for making the largest Lego Harry Potter Hogwarts castle in the world. It's 10 foot by 10 foot at its base.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. Just over the top, sold out, taken over your life.
Right.
And with that in mind, have marriages broken up on account of this?
I've never really heard of anyone breaking up over this. It will navigate their love life.
Yeah.
So say you're single and you're this deep into the hobby, you probably won't pursue a relationship if they look at what you do and are disappointed about it.
Yeah.
There are a number of cases where it is a contentious point in the marriage,
mm-hmm.
where one person is really into the hobby and the other person isn't, and just kind of putting up with it. And it works both ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the man who's in the hobby, sometimes it's the woman, but not the other person. So it is a point of contention at some point, but there are plenty of couples out there that are both just as in love with these little plastic building bricks as their spouse.
Well, and I think you and your wife are a good example of how maybe this can bring people together,
right?
Rather than drive them apart
and put you in debt.
Right, and take care of whatever expendable income you have.
Yeah, because nobody's the voice of reason at this point. It's like, hey, look at that. That's great. Let's get it.
Yeah. To go with our ninjas, hey, I know, Batman. Stuff
right.
like that. So
yes.
Where does the content for the blog come from? Because you had said that this was among the smaller sites, and that all by itself is just baffling because it's huge.
Yeah, it's still a massive site. A lot of the content, we get press releases from LEGO directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so when new information comes up, they're really starting to show pictures and rolling out what's coming up in 2015. So our admin will get those press releases and break those down into articles. Otherwise, we invite contributors to step up and talk about the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really different for the Brick Blogger is, unlike other sites, we don't actually require a registration,
mm-hmm.
which means that we don't turn away kids that are like under 16 or 18, which is what a lot of other sites do.
Right.
And we encourage those younger fans to come and actually write about the toy that they're passionate about. So that's another big source of where our content comes from. Other people are just talking about their collections. We have one guy who, with all the interesting parts in Lego, his main focus is the basic brick.
Uh-huh.
Now, he's over in Europe, so he has access to this German factory over there where they had done a lot of the little proof test proofs
mm-hmm.
of experimental bricks. And he can tell you about clutch power. He can tell you about the stamping process. He can tell you about the various colors that they tried over the years. And he's just nuts over just bricks.
Wow.
And he's just one of our contributors.
So you can get real technical and into tensile strength and all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. So we just encourage the community that we've built around the Brick Blogger is to help feed in on itself and just basically start a conversation. And to help with that, the admin has also looked at the other sites and realized if we're going to do this, we need to do it in a small, timely manner where she'll only put up one article a day at most. A lot of sites will dump 15, 20 articles right on the front page, and the first part of the first part of the news is dropping off the page already because there's just too much out there.
Yeah, where does my eye go, and how can I focus on anything?
Yeah. So we drip feed the news so that it's a manageable site. And that's one of the reasons why I say we're not the biggest out there is because we're not putting every single bit of news that's possible out on the site. We're trying to make it accessible.
That's really smart to, you know, let the audience stay caught up and, oh, no, what did I miss? There's, you know, RSS feeds that I get that I can't keep up with it.
Exactly.
And rather than try, I just give up.
Right. And we don't want that to happen because one of our biggest focuses is, like I said before, we want the teens, which happens to be a market that nobody really addresses. Either Lego sees them as being too old, and a lot of the adult sites see them as being too young.
Right.
And so they get kind of left out there. They still love the toy, and it's one of the reasons why a lot of people go into what's called the Dark Ages. And that's just a term that we use that says it's the period of time between when you built as a child and when you rediscover it as an adult.
Yeah, that's good targeting right there. So much to it. Now, whose idea was Brick Blogger? Was it yours or somebody else?
It was actually Anna's who, and this is where the funny story comes in. I asked her recently about this, and I was like, was this an philanthropic idea where you wanted to target these people who were being underrepresented? And she goes, as nice as that sounds, no, it had nothing to do with that.
Huh.
What really happened was she got out of her dark ages, was so enthusiastic, wouldn't shut up about Lego. She would just constantly talk. And then finally, her husband said, okay, you're going to learn about blogging. I'm going to get you started, and you're not going to bother me about this. Because he was not a fan.
Yeah.
So she went through a course about blogging back in 2010, and then starting January was the birth of the Brick Blogger.
Wow.
And during that first year, I had been doing a lot of freelance writing on a site called Suite 101, but they changed on me. So I was going back and forth and just periodically posting content as a contributor for the Brick Blogger starting in 2001. And as we went along, we thought, based on the responses we were getting, this seems to be our market. Let's target them. And it has made the Brick Blogger a rather unique site as a entry point into this massive fandom for adults when it comes to a child's toy.
And it's so it's not just big, but it's big and it's really well done and well organized. Mm-hmm. And I guess before we run out of time, I just was curious, what does the Lego company say to you guys? Do they like you? Are they oblivious? Do they ever, you know, buy advertising, things like that?
Oh, actually, they do run an affiliate program that any website can participate in. So if you want something on the Collector Show, featuring Lego's products, they actually have a widget you can put in, and then you get a percentage of whatever gets sold through that.
Note to self, look for a widget.
Yeah. And then as far as actual support, that's actually where I brought a lot of value into the Brick Blogger. I was able to get in contact with Lego's community team, and in their community team, they have ways to support both the Lego user groups as well as websites.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through that conversation that I got the Brick Blogger, essentially hooked up. And now Lego supports us. We basically give our information, you know, how many times has our site been viewed in a month? What is our, you know, unique users per day? What's basically all the traffic? And they said, okay, based on that information, we give you a budget of this much per year.
Mm-hmm.
And that budget, we can then ask for review copies.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of the ways they support us, just straight directly.
So relationship building for Lego doesn't just start and stop with their customers. It goes into the blogosphere. It's an entire community.
Yeah, they want to make sure that you're serious. So there are, you know, prerequisites. Your blog has to be up for so much time. You have to have at least this much fan support and interest. And so those considerations are in there. But they realize that usually the best advertising is not them making a commercial and putting it on TV where you may or may not see it.
Right.
It's actually talking to the fans. And then the fans tell other fans, and it just spirals from there.
Yeah, it's word of mouth is always the best endorsement. And unhappily, we're out of time. But Will Reed of thebrickblogger.com, and that's your website. It's just brickblogger.com, right?
Yeah, thebrickblogger.com.
So check out thebrickblogger.com. And I want to thank Will Reed for taking time to talk with us on the Collector's Show.
It was my pleasure.
Oh, yeah. We loved having you, and I'm sure we'll want you back. And everybody else, stay tuned for one more quick word right after this. I want to thank Will Reed of Brick Blogger for taking time to talk to us. I had done that interview with him before my voice gave up. And it's interesting that whether it's castles, ninjas, or Batman, or Star Wars, or whatever you like, Lego probably has something for you. It transcends gender and age, as we just heard. The values of the Lego collecting experience makes it possible for people from everywhere, your neighborhood, your school, and even all over the world, to indulge their collective imaginations and creativity just for fun. And you're having fun all the while building relationships with people from all over the place who share a passion for collecting Legos. And I know that the term community is much overused, but I can't think of another way to express what the Lego collecting phenomena is. And I just got to wonder, is there anything else in the collecting world or anywhere that can do what Lego has done? If you have an opinion, let me know, haroldnickel@gmail.com. Now next week, if things work out like I hope they will, we're going to be talking about Nancy Drew, not with Nancy Drew, but about her. There's a world-class collection of Nancy Drew books, and the collector of those same books we hope to speak to. And one of the things I'm going to ask her about Nancy Drew were all the books about clocks and smugglers. You'll have to come back to find out, and hopefully my voice will be back to normal. Thanks for listening to the Collector's Show here on Web Talk Radio. Come back next week for more.